Chapter 46. Faldara. The country around the waygate was rolling, forested hills, but aside from the gates themselves, there was no sign of any Ogier grove. Most of the trees were gray skeletons clawing at the sky. Fewer evergreens than Rand was used to dotted the forest, and of them, dead, brown needles and leaves covered many. Loyal made no comment beyond a sad shaking of his head.
"As dead as the blasted lands," Nynaeve said, frowning.
Egwene pulled her cloak around her and shivered.
"At least we're out," Perrin said, and Matt added,
"Out where?"
"Shinar," Land told them. "We're in the borderlands."
In his hard voice was a note that said home, almost. Rand gathered his cloak against the cold.
"The borderlands. Then the blight was close by. The blight. The eye of the world. And what they had come to do."
"We are close to Faldara," Moraine said. "Only a few miles." Across the treetops, towers rose to the north and east of them, dark against the morning sky. Between the hills and the woods, the towers often vanished as they rode, only to reappear again when they topped a particularly tall rise. Rand noticed trees split open as if struck by lightning.
"The cold," Lan answered when he asked. "Sometimes the winter is so cold here, the sap freezes and trees burst. There are nights when you can hear them cracking like fireworks, and the air is so sharp you think that might shatter too. There are more than usual this winter past."
Rand shook his head.
"Trees bursting?
And that was during an ordinary winter? What must this winter have been like? Surely like nothing he could imagine."
"Who says winter's past?" Matt said, his teeth chattering.
"Why, this, a fine spring, sheepherder," Lan said. "A fine spring to be alive. But if you want warm, well, it will be warm in the blight."
Softly, Matt muttered.
"Blood and ashes. Blood and bloody ashes."
Rand barely heard him, but it sounded heartfelt. They began to pass farms, but though it was the hour for midday meals to be cooking, no smoke rose from the high stone chimneys. The fields were empty of men and livestock both, though sometimes a plow or a wagon stood abandoned, as if the owner meant to be back any minute. At one farm close by the road, a lone chicken scratched in the yard. One barn door swung freely with the wind. The other had broken off the bottom hinge and hung at an angle. The tall house, odd to Rand's Two Rivers eyes, with its sharp-peaked roof of big wooden shingles running almost to the ground, was still and silent. No dog came out to bark at them. A scythe lay in the middle of the barnyard. Buckets were overturned in a heap beside the well. Moraine frowned at the farmhouse as they rode by. She lifted Aldib's reins, and the white mare quickened her pace. The Emmons fielders were clustered with Loyal, a little behind the Aes Sedai in the water. Rand shook his head. He could not imagine anything growing there, ever. But then he could not really imagine the ways, either. Even now that he was past them, he could not.
"I don't think she expected this," Nynaeve said quietly, with a gesture that took in all the empty farms they had seen. "Where did they all go?" Egwene said. "Why? They can't have been gone very long." "What makes you say that?" Matt asked. "From the look of the barn door, they could have been gone all winter."
Nynaeve and Egwene both looked at him as if he were slow-witted.
"The curtains in the windows," Egwene said patiently. "They look too light for winter curtains, even here. As cold as it is here, no woman would have had those up more than a week or two, maybe less."
The wisdom nodded.
"Curtains," Perrin chuckled.
He immediately wiped the smile off his face when the two women raised their eyebrows at him.
"Oh, I agree with you. There wasn't enough rust on that scythe for any more than a week in the open. You should have seen that, Matt, even if you missed the curtains."
Rand glanced sideways at Perrin, trying not to stare. His eyes were sharper than Perrin's, or had been, when they used to hunt rabbits together. But he had not been able to see that scythe blade well enough to make out any rust.
"I really don't care where they went," Matt grumbled. "I just want to find some place with a fire. Soon."
"But why did they go?" Rand said under his breath. "The blight was not far off here.
The Blight, where all the Fades and Trollocs were, those not down in Andor chasing them. The Blight, where they were going. He raised his voice enough to be heard by those close to him.
Nynaeve, maybe you and Egwene don't have to go to the Eye with us.
The two women looked at him as if he were speaking gibberish, but with the Blight so close, he had to make one last try.
Maybe it's enough for you to be close. Moraine didn't say you have to go. Or you, Loyal. You could stay at Faldara, until we come back. Or you could start for Tarvalin. Maybe there'll be a merchant train, or I'll bet Moraine would even hire a coach. We will meet in Tarvalin when it's all over.
Tavirin.
Loyal's sigh was a rumble like thunder on the horizon.
You swirl lives around you, Randalthor. You and your friends. Your fate chooses ours.
The Ogier shrugged, and suddenly a broad grin split his face.
Besides, it will be something to meet the Green Man. Elder Haman always talks about his meeting with the Green Man, and so does my father, and most of the elders.
So many, Perrin said. The stories say the Green Man is hard to find, and no one can find him twice.
Not twice, no, Loyal agreed. But then, I have never met him, and neither have you. He doesn't seem to avoid Ogier quite the way he does humans. He knows so much about trees, even the tree songs.
Rand said, The point I was trying to make is...
The wisdom cut him off.
She says Egwene and I are part of the pattern, too. All woven in with you three. If she is to be believed, there's something about the way that piece of the pattern is woven that might stop the Dark One. And I am afraid I do believe her. Too much has happened not to. But if Egwene and I go away, what might we change about the pattern? I was only trying to...
Again Nynaeve interrupted sharply.
I know what you are trying to do.
She looked at him until he shifted uneasily in his saddle, then her face softened.
I know what you are trying to do, Rand. I have little liking for any Aes Sedai, and this one least of all, I think. I have less for going into the Blight, but least of all is the liking I have for the Father of Lies. If you boys, you men, can do what has to be done when you'd rather do almost anything else, why do you think I will do less? Or Egwene?
She did not appear to expect an answer. Gathering her reins, she frowned toward the Aes Sedai up ahead.
I wonder if we're going to reach this Faldara place soon, or does she mean us to spend the night out in this?
As she trotted toward Moraine, Matt said,
She called us men. It seems like only yesterday she was saying we shouldn't be off leading strings, and now she calls us men. You still shouldn't be off your mother's apron strings, Egwene said,
but Rand did not think her heart was in it. She moved Bella close to his bay and lowered her voice so none of the others could hear, although Matt at least tried.
I only danced with Aram, Rand, she said softly,
not looking at him.
You wouldn't hold it against me. Dancing with somebody I will never see again, would you?
No, he told her.
But what had made her bring it up now?
Of course not. But suddenly he remembered something Min had said in Baerlon, what seemed 100 years ago.
She's not for you, nor you for her. At least, not in the way you both want.
The town of Faldara was built on hills higher than the surrounding country. It was nowhere near as big as Camelin, but the wall around it was as high as Camelin's. For a full mile outside that wall, in every direction, the ground was clear of anything taller than grass, and that cut low. Nothing could come close without being seen from one of the many tall towers topped by wooden hoardings. Where the walls of Camelin had a beauty about them, the builders of Faldara seemed not to have cared if anyone found their wall beautiful. The gray stone was grimly implacable, proclaiming that it existed for one purpose alone, to hold. Pennants atop the hoardings whipped in the wind, making the stooping Black Hawk of Shinar seem to fly all along the walls. Lan tossed back the hood of his cloak and, despite the cold, motioned for the others to do the same. Moraine had already lowered hers. It's the law in Shinar, the warder said. In all the borderlands. No one may hide his face inside a town's walls.
Are they all that good-looking? Matt laughed.
A half-man can't hide with his face exposed, the warder said in a flat voice. Rand's grin slid off his face. Hastily, Matt pushed back his hood.
The gates stood open, tall and covered with dark iron, but a dozen armored men stood guard in golden-yellow surcoats, bearing the Black Hawk. The hilts of long swords on their backs peaked over their shoulders, and broadsword or mace or axe hung at every waist. Their horses were tethered nearby, made grotesque by the steel bardings covering their chests and necks and heads, with lances to stirrup, all ready to ride at an instant. The guards made no move to stop Lan and Moraine and the others. Indeed, they waved and called out happily.
"Daishan!" one cried, shaking steel-gauntleted fists over his head as they rode past. "Daishan!"
A number of others shouted,
"Glory to the Builders!"
and
"Kisarai Tiwansho!"
Loyal looked surprised, then a broad smile split his face, and he waved to the guards. One man ran alongside Lan's horse a little way, unhampered by the armor he wore.
"Will the golden crane fly again, Daishan?"
"Peace, Ragan," was all the warder said, and the man fell away.
He returned the guards' waves, but his face was suddenly even more grim. As they rode through stone-paved streets, crowded with people and wagons, Rand frowned worriedly. Faldara was bulging at the seams, but the people were neither the eager crowds of Camelin, enjoying the grandeur of the city, even as they squabbled, nor the milling throngs of Berlon. Packed cheek by jowl, these folk watched their party ride by with leaden eyes and faces blanked of emotion. Carts and wagons jammed every alleyway and half the streets, piled high with jumbled household furnishings, and carved chests packed so tight that clothes spilled. On top sat the children. Adults kept the younglings up where they could be seen and did not let them stray even to play. The children were even more silent than their elders, their eyes bigger, more haunting in their stares. The nooks and crannies between the wagons were filled with shaggy cattle and black-spotted pigs in makeshift pens. Crates of chickens and ducks and geese fitfully made up for the silence of the people. He knew now where all the farmers had gone. Lan led the way to the fortress in the middle of the town, a massive stone pile atop the highest hill. A dry moat, deep and wide, its bottom a forest of sharp steel spikes, razor-edged and as tall as a man, surrounded the towered walls of the keep. A place for a last defense if the rest of the town fell. From one of the gate towers, an armored man called down,
"Welcome, Daishan!"
Another shouted to the inside of the fortress,
"The Golden Crane! The Golden Crane!"
Their hooves drummed on the heavy timbers of the lowered drawbridge as they crossed the moat and rode under the sharp points of the stout portcullis. Once through the gates, Lan swung down out of his saddle to lead Mandarb, signaling the others to dismount. The first courtyard was a huge square paved with big stone blocks and surrounded by towers and battlements as fierce as those on the outside of the walls. As big as it was, the courtyard appeared just as crowded as the streets, and as much in turmoil, though there was an order to the crowding here. Everywhere were armored men and armored horses. At half a dozen smithies around the court, hammers clanged and big bellows, tugged by two leather-aproned men apiece, made the forge fires roar. A steady stream of boys ran with new-made horseshoes for the farriers. Fletchers sat making arrows, and every time a basket was filled, it was whisked away and replaced with an empty one. Liveried grooms appeared on the run, eager and smiling in black and gold. Rand hastily untied his belongings from behind the saddle and gave the bay up to one of the grooms as a man in plate and mail and leather bowed formally. He wore a bright yellow cloak edged in red over his armor with the black hawk on the breast and a yellow surcoat bearing a gray owl. He wore no helmet and was bareheaded, truly, for his hair had all been shaved except for a topknot tied with a leather cord.
"It has been long, Moraine Aes Sedai. It is good to see you, Daishan. Very good."
He bowed again to Loyal and murmured,
"Glory to the Builders. Kisarai Tiwansho."
"I am unworthy," Loyal replied formally, "and the work small. Tsingu Ma Choba."
"You honor us, Builder," the man said. "Kisarai Tiwansho."
He turned back to Lan.
Word was sent to Lord Agomar, Daishan. As soon as you were seen coming, he is waiting for you. This way, please.
As they followed him into the fortress, along drafty stone corridors hung with colorful tapestries and long silk screens of hunting scenes and battles, he continued,
I am glad the call reached you, Daishan. Will you raise the golden crane banner once more?
The halls were stark except for the wall hangings, and even they used the fewest figures made with the fewest lines necessary to convey meaning, though in bright colors.
Are things really as bad as they appear, Ingtar? Lan asked quietly.
Rand wondered if his own ears were twitching like Loyal's. The man's topknot swayed as he shook his head, but he hesitated before putting on a grin.
Things are never as bad as they appear, Daishan. A little worse than usual this year, that is all. The raids continued through the winter, even in the hardest of it. But the raiding was no worse than anywhere else along the border. They still come in the night, but what else can be expected in the spring, if this can be called spring? Scouts return from the Blight, those who do come back, with news of Trolloc camps. Always fresh news of more camps. But we will meet them at Tarwin's Gap, Daishan, and turn them back as we always have.
Of course, Lan said, but he did not sound certain. Ingtar's grin slipped, but came back immediately. Silently he showed them into Lord Agilmar's study, then claimed the press of his duties and left. It was a room as purpose-made as all the rest of the fortress, with arrow slits in the outer wall and a heavy bar for the thick door, which had its own arrow piercings and was bound by iron straps. Only one tapestry hung here. It covered an entire wall and showed men, armored like the men of Faldara, fighting Murdral and Trollocs in a mountain pass. A table, one chest, and a few chairs were the only furnishings, except for two racks on the wall, and they caught Rand's eye as much as the tapestry. One held a two-handed sword, taller than a man, a more ordinary broadsword, and below them, a studded mace and a long, kite-shaped shield bearing three foxes. From the other hung a suit of armor, complete and arranged as one would wear it. Crested helmet with its barred face guard over a double mail camail. Mail hauberk, split for riding, and leather undercoat, polished from wear. Breastplate, steel gauntlets, knee and elbow cops, and half plate for shoulders and arms and legs. Even here in the heart of the keep, weapons and armor seemed ready to be donned at any moment. Like the furniture, they were simply and severely decorated with gold. Agilmar himself rose at their entrance and came around the table, littered with maps and sheafs of paper and pens standing in inkpots. He seemed at first glance too peaceful for the room in his blue velvet coat with its tall wide collar and soft leather boots, but a second look showed Rand differently. Like all the fighting men he had seen, Agilmar's head was shaved except for a topknot, and that pure white. His face was as hard as Lan's, the only lines creases at the corners of his eyes, and those eyes like brown stone, though they bore a smile now.
Peace, but it is good to see you, Daishan, the Lord of Faldara said. And you, Moraine Aes Sedai, perhaps even more. Your presence warms me, Aes Sedai.
Ninte kalichnia no domashita, Agilmar Daishan.
Moraine replied formally, but with a note in her voice that said they were old friends.
Your welcome warms me, Lord Agilmar.
Kodome kalichnia gani Aes Sedai hei. Here is always a welcome for Aes Sedai.
He turned to Loyal.
You are far from the steading, Ogier, but you honor Faldara. Always glory to the builders. Kisarai tiwonsho hei.
I am unworthy, Loyal said, bowing. It is you who do me honor.
He glanced at the stark stone walls and seemed to struggle with himself. Rand was glad the Ogier managed to refrain from adding further comment. Servants in black and gold appeared on silent, soft-slippered feet. Some brought folded cloths, damp and hot, on silver trays for wiping the dust from their faces and hands. Others bore mulled wine and silver bowls of dried plums and apricots. Lord Agilmar gave orders for rooms to be prepared and baths.
A long journey from Tarvalen, he said. You must be tired.
A short journey, the path we came, Lan told him. But more tiring than the long way.
Agomar looked puzzled when the warder said no more, but he merely said,
"A few days' rest will put you all in fine fettle."
"I ask one night's shelter, Lord Agomar," Moraine said, "for ourselves and our horses, and fresh supplies in the morning if you can spare them. We must leave you early, I am afraid."
Agomar frowned.
"But I thought..." "Moraine," said I, "I have no right to ask it of you, but you would be worth 1,000 lances in Tarwin's Gap. And you, Daishan, 1,000 men will come when they hear the golden crane flies once more."
"The 7 towers are broken," Lan said harshly, "and Mulkir is dead. The few of her people left scattered across the face of the earth. I'm a warder, Agomar, sworn to the flame of Tarvalin, and I am bound into the Blight."
"Of course, Dasher. Lan, of course. But surely a few days' delay, a few weeks at most, will make no difference. You are needed. You and Moraine Sedai."
Moraine took a silver goblet from one of the servants.
"Ingtar seems to believe you'll defeat this threat as you have defeated many others across the years."
"Aye, Sedai," Agomar said wryly. "If Ingtar had to ride alone to Tarwin's Gap, he would ride the whole way, proclaiming that the Trollocs would be turned back once more. He has almost pride enough to believe he could do it alone."
"He is not as confident as you think this time, Agomar."
The warder held a cup, but he did not drink.
"How bad is it?"
Agomar hesitated, pulling a map from the tangle on the table. He stared unseeing at the map for a moment, then tossed it back.
"When we ride to the Gap," he said quietly, "the people will be sent south to Falmoran. Perhaps the capital can hold. Peace, it must. Something must hold."
"That bad," Lan said, and Agomar nodded wearily.
Rand exchanged worried looks with Matt and Perrin. It was easy to believe the Trollocs gathering in the Blight were after him, after them. Agomar went on grimly.
"Kandor, Arafel, Saldea. The Trollocs raided them all straight through the winter. Nothing like that has happened since the Trolloc Wars. The raids have never been so fierce or so large or pressed home so hard. Every king and council is sure a great thrust is coming out of the Blight, and every one of the Borderlands believes it is coming at them. None of their scouts and none of the warders report Trolloc massing above their borders, as we have here. But they believe, and each is afraid to send fighting men elsewhere. People whisper that the world is ending, that the Dark One is loose again. Shinar will ride to Tarwin's Gap alone, and we will be outnumbered at least 10-1. At least. It may be the last ingathering of the lances. Lan, no. Daishan, for you are a diademed battle lord of Mulkir, whatever you say. Daishan, the golden crane banner in the van would put heart into the men who know they are riding north to die. The word will spread like wildfire, and though their kings have told them to hold where they are, lances will come from Arafel and Kandor, and even from Saldea. Though they cannot come in time to stand with us in the Gap, they may save Shinar."
Lan peered into his wine. His face did not change, but wine slopped over his hand. The silver goblet crumpled in his grip. A servant took the ruined cup and wiped the warder's hand with a cloth. A second put a fresh goblet in his hand while the other was whisked away. Lan did not seem to notice.
"I cannot,"
he whispered hoarsely. When he raised his head, his blue eyes burned with a fierce light, but his voice was calm again and flat.
"I am a warder, Agomar."
His sharp gaze slid across Rand and Matt and Perrin to Moraine.
"At first light I ride to the Blight."
Agomar sighed heavily.
"Moraine Sedai, will you not come at least? And I Sedai could make the difference."
"I cannot, Lord Agomar."
Moraine seemed troubled.
"There is indeed a battle to be fought, and it is not chance that the Trollocs gather above Shinar, but our battle... the true battle with the Dark One will take place in the Blight, at the eye of the world. You must fight your battle, and we ours."
"You cannot be saying he is loose."
Rock-like Agomar sounded shaken, and Moraine quickly shook her head.
Not yet. If we win at the Eye of the World, perhaps not ever again.
Can you even find the Eye, Aes Sedai? If holding the Dark One depends on that, we might as well be dead. Many have tried and failed.
I can find it, Lord Agomar. Hope is not lost yet.
Agomar studied her, and then the others. He appeared puzzled by Nynaeve and Egwene. Their farm clothes contrasted sharply with Moraine's silk dress, though all were travel-stained.
They are Aes Sedai, too? He asked doubtfully.
When Moraine shook her head, he seemed even more confused. His gaze ran over the young men from Emmons Field, settling on Rand, brushing the red-wrapped sword at his waist.
A strange guard you take with you, Aes Sedai. Only one fighting man.
He glanced at Perrin and at the axe hanging from his belt.
Perhaps two, but both barely more than lads. Let me send men with you. 100 lances more or less will make no difference in the gap, but you will need more than one warder and 3 youths. And 2 women will not help unless they are Aiel in disguise. The blight is worse than usual this year. It stirs.
100 lances would be too many, Lan said, and 1,000 not enough. The larger the party we take into the blight, the more chance we will attract attention. We must reach the Eye without fighting if we can. You know the outcome is all but foretold when Trolloc's force battle inside the blight.
Agomar nodded grimly, but he refused to give up.
Fewer, then. Even 10 good men would give you a better chance of escorting Moraine Sedai and the other 2 women to the Green Man than will just these young fellows.
Rand abruptly realized the Lord of Faldara assumed it was Nynaeve and Egwene who, with Moraine, would fight against the Dark One. It was natural. That sort of struggle meant using the One Power, and that meant women.
That sort of struggle means using the power.
He tucked his thumbs behind his sword belt and gripped the buckle hard to keep his hands from shaking.
No men, Moraine said.
Agomar opened his mouth again, and she went on before he could speak.
It is the nature of the Eye and the nature of the Green Man. How many from Faldara have ever found the Green Man and the Eye?
Ever?
Agomar shrugged.
Since the War of the 100 Years, you could count them on the fingers of one hand. No more than 1 in 5 years from all the borderlands together.
No one finds the Eye of the World, Moraine said, unless the Green Man wants them to find it. Need is the key, and intention. I know where to go. I have been there before.
Rand's head whipped around in surprise. His was not the only one among the Emmonsfielders, but the Aes Sedai did not seem to notice.
But one among us seeking glory, seeking to add his name to those 4, and we may never find it, though I take us straight to the spot I remember.
You have seen the Green Man, Moraine Sedai?
The Lord of Faldara sounded impressed, but in the next breath he frowned.
But if you have already met him once...
Need is the key, Moraine said softly. And there can be no greater need than mine, than ours. And I have something those other seekers have not.
Her eyes barely stirred from Agomar's face, but Rand was sure they had drifted toward Loyal, just for an instant before the Aes Sedai pulled them back. Rand met the Ogier's eyes, and Loyal shrugged.
Tavirin,
the Ogier said softly. Agomar threw up his hands.
It will be as you say, Aes Sedai. Peace, if the real battle is to be at the Eye of the World, I am tempted to take the Black Hawk banner after you instead of to the Gap. I could cut a path for you.
That would be disaster, Lord Agomar, both at Tarwin's Gap and at the Eye. You have your battle, and we ours.
Peace. As you say, Aes Sedai.
Having reached a decision, however much he disliked it, the shaven-headed Lord of Faldara seemed to put it out of his mind. He invited them to table with him, all the while making conversation about hawks and horses and dogs, but with never a mention of Trollocs or Tauern's Gap or the Eye of the World. The chamber where they ate was as stark and plain as Lord Agomar's study had been, with little more furnishing it than the table and chairs themselves. And they were severe in line and form. Beautiful, but severe. A big fireplace warmed the room, but not so much that a man called out hurriedly would be stunned by the cold outside. Liveried servants brought soup and bread and cheese, and the talk was of books and music until Lord Aglamar realized the Emmons Field folk were not talking. Like a good host, he asked gently probing questions, designed to bring them out of their quiet. Rand soon found himself competing to tell about Emmons Field and the Two Rivers. It was an effort not to say too much. He hoped the others were guarding their tongues, Matt especially. Nynaeve alone held herself back, eating and drinking silently.
"There's a song on the Two Rivers," Matt said, "coming home from Tarwyn's Gap."
He finished hesitantly, as if suddenly realizing that he was bringing up what they had been avoiding. But Aglamar handled it smoothly.
"Little wonder. Few lands have not sent men to hold back the Blight over the years."
Rand looked at Matt and Perrin. Matt silently formed the word Manetherin. Aglamar whispered to one of the servants, and while others cleared the table, that man vanished and returned with a canister and clay pipes for Lan, Loyal, and Lord Aglamar.
"Two rivers to Bach," the Lord of Faldara said as they filled their pipes. "Hard to come by here, but worth the cost."
When Loyal and the two older men were puffing contentedly, Aglamar glanced at the Ogier.
"You seem troubled, Builder. Not beset by the longing, I hope. How long have you been away from the steading?"
"It is not the longing. I have not been gone such a time as that."
Loyal shrugged, and the blue-gray streamer rising from his pipe made a spiral above the table as he gestured.
"I expected, hoped, that the grove would still be here. Some remnant of Mafal de Daranel, at least."
"Qui sera Tiwancho?" Aglamar murmured. "The Trolloc Wars left nothing but memories, Loyal son of Arendt, and people to build on them. They could not duplicate the builder's work any more than I could. Those intricate curves and patterns your people create are beyond human eyes and hands to make. Perhaps we wish to avoid a poor imitation that would only have been an ever-present reminder to us of what we had lost. There is a different beauty in simplicity, in a single line placed just so, a single flower among the rocks. The harshness of the stone makes the flower more precious. We try not to dwell too much on what is gone. The strongest heart will break under that strain."
"The rose petal floats on water," Lan recited softly. "The kingfisher flashes above the pond. Life and beauty swirl in the midst of death."
"Yes," Aglamar said. "Yes. That one has always symbolized the whole of it to me, too."
The two men bowed their heads to one another. Poetry out of Lan? The man was like an onion. Every time Rand thought he knew something about the water, he discovered another layer underneath. Loyal nodded slowly.
"Perhaps I also dwell too much on what is gone. And yet the groves were beautiful."
But he was looking at the Stark Room as if seeing it anew, and suddenly finding things worth seeing. Ingtar appeared and bowed to Lord Aglamar.
"Your pardon, Lord, but you wanted to know of anything out of the ordinary, however small."
"Yes, what is it?"
"A small thing, Lord. A stranger tried to enter the town. Not of Shinar. By his accent, a Lugarder. Sometimes, at least. When the South Gate guards attempted to question him, he ran away. He was seen to enter the forest, but only a short time later he was found scaling the wall."
"A small thing."
Aglamar's chair scraped across the floor as he stood.
"Peace! The Tower Watch is so negligent a man can reach the walls unseen, and you call it a small thing?"
"He is a madman, Lord."
Awe touched Ingtar's voice.
"The light shields madmen. Perhaps the light cloaked the Tower Watch's eyes and allowed him to reach the walls. Surely one poor madman can do no harm."
"Has he been brought to the keep yet?" "Good. Bring him to me here. Now."
Ingtar bowed and left, and Aglamar turned to Moraine.
"Your pardon, Aes Sedai, but I must see to this. Perhaps he is only a pitiful wretch with his mind blinded by the light, but... 2 days gone. 5 of our own people were found in the night trying to saw through the hinges of a horse gate. Small,
but enough to let Trollocs in.
He grimaced.
Dark friends, I suppose, though I hate to think it of any Shinaran. They were torn to pieces by the people before the guards could take them, so I'll never know. If Shinarans can be dark friends, I must be especially careful of Outlanders in these days. If you wish to withdraw, I will have you shown to your rooms.
Dark friends know neither border nor blood, Moraine said. They are found in every land, and are of none. I, too, am interested in seeing this man. The pattern is forming a web, Lord Agomar, but the final shape of the web is not yet set. It may yet entangle the world, or unravel and set the wheel to a new weaving. At this point, even small things can change the shape of the web. At this point, I am wary of small things out of the ordinary.
Agomar glanced at Nynaeve and Egwene.
As you wish, Aes Sedai.
Ingtar returned with two guards carrying long bills and escorting a man who looked like a ragbag turned inside out. Grime layered his face and matted his scraggly uncut hair and beard. He hunched into the room, sunken eyes darting this way and that. A rancid smell wafted ahead of him. Rand sat forward intently, trying to see through all the dirt.
"You've no cause to be holding me like this," the filthy man whined. "I'm only a poor destitute, abandoned by the light and seeking a place like everyone else to shelter from the shadow."
"The Borderlands are a strange place to seek," Agomar began, when Matt cut him off.
"The peddler!"
"Pardon Fain," Perrin agreed, nodding.
"The beggar,"
Rand said, suddenly hoarse. He sat back at the sudden hatred that flared in Fane's eyes.
"He's the man who was asking about us in Camelon. He has to be."
"So this concerns you after all, Moraine Sedai," Agomar said slowly.
Moraine nodded.
"I greatly fear that it does."
"I didn't want to,"
Fane began to cry. Fat tears cut runnels in the dirt on his cheeks, but they were unable to reach the bottom layer.
"He made me, him and his burning eyes."
Rand flinched. Matt had his hand under his coat, no doubt clutching the dagger from Shadar Logoth again.
"He made me his hound to hunt and follow with never a bit of rest. Only his hound, even after he threw me away."
"It does concern us all," Moraine said grimly. "Is there a place where I can talk with him alone, Lord Agomar?"
Her mouth tightened with distaste.
"And wash him first. I may need to touch him."
Agomar nodded and spoke softly to Ingtar, who bowed and disappeared through the door.
"I will not be compelled."
The voice was Fane's, but he was no longer crying, and an arrogant snap had replaced the whine. He stood upright, not crouching at all. Throwing back his head, he shouted at the ceiling,
"Never again! I will not!"
He faced Agomar as if the men flanking him were his own bodyguard, and the Lord of Faldara his equal rather than his captor. His tone became sleek and oily.
"There is a misunderstanding here, great lord. I am sometimes taken by spells, but that will pass soon. Yes, soon I will be rid of them."
Contemptuously, he flicked his fingers against the rags he wore.
"Do not be misled by these, great lord. I have had to disguise myself against those who would have tried to stop me, and my journey has been long and hard. But at last I have reached lands where men still know the dangers of Baalzaman, where men still fight the Dark One."
Rand stared, goggling. It was Fane's voice, but the words did not sound like the peddler at all.
"So you've come here because we fight Trollocs," Agomar said. "And you are so important that someone wants to stop you. These people say you are a peddler called Pardon Fane, and that you are following them."
Fane hesitated. He glanced at Moraine and hurriedly pulled his eyes away from the Aes Sedai. His gaze ran across the Emmons fielders, then jerked back to Agomar. Rand felt the hate in that look, and the fear. When Fane spoke again, though, his voice was unruffled.
"Pardon Fane is simply one of the many disguises I have been forced to wear over the years. Friends of the Dark One pursue me, for I have learned how to defeat the Shadow. I can show you how to defeat him, Great Lord.
We do as well as men can, Agomar said dryly. The wheel weaves as the wheel wills. But we have fought the Dark One almost since the breaking of the world without peddlers to teach us how.
Great Lord, your might is unquestioned, but can it stand against the Dark One forever? Do you not often find yourself pressed to hold? Forgive my temerity, Great Lord. He will crush you in the end as you are. I know. Believe me, I do. But I can show you how to scour the Shadow from the land, Great Lord.
His tone became even more unctuous, though still haughty.
If you but try what I advise, you will see, Great Lord. You will cleanse the land. You, Great Lord, can do it, if you direct your might in the right direction. Avoid letting Tarvalin entangle you in its snares, and you can save the world. Great Lord, you will be the man remembered through history for bringing final victory to the light.
The guards held their places, but their hands shifted on the long shafts of the bills as if they thought they might have to use them.
He thinks a great deal of himself for a peddler, Agomar said to Lan over his shoulder. I think Ingtar is right. He is mad.
Fane's eyes tightened angrily, but his voice remained smooth.
Great Lord, I know my words must appear grandiose, but if you will only...
He cut off abruptly, stepping back as Moraine rose and started slowly around the table. Only the guard's lowered bills kept Fane from backing right out of the room. Stopping behind Matt's chair, Moraine put a hand on his shoulder and bent to whisper in his ear. Whatever she said, the tension went out of his face and he took his hand from under his coat. The Aes Sedai went on until she stood behind Agelmar, confronting Fane. As she came to a halt, the peddler sank into a crouch once more.
I hate him, he whimpered. I want to be free of him. I want to walk in the light again.
His shoulders began to shake, and tears streamed down his face even more heavily than before.
He made me do it.
I am afraid he is more than a peddler, Lord Agelmar, Moraine said. Less than human, worse than vile, more dangerous than you can imagine. He can be bathed after I have spoken with him. I dare not waste a minute. Come, Lan.